Well, hi, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini. Thanks for coming back to the Go See Talk podcast experience. Man, oh, man, oh, man, if you love film scores, we have a wonderful guest for you. Classical musician, conductor, singer, songwriter, orchestrator, musical man of so many talents, Randy Edelman is the legend, and we are thrilled to be having him on today. There's not many composers who have composed for Schwarzenegger and Stallone, but Randy can claim that, as well as a multitude of things over his illustrious career. But we are so happy to have him on board. Randy, how's things in your world?
Everything's great. Do you consider those people the height?
No, I was just thinking that it was
I'm only joking. Everybody is they're all fine. I just take them as they come. But those were actually good experiences. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting right now really high, maybe on the 58th floor, and I literally, from my window here in this hotel, I can see the Holland Tunnel. And the picture I did with Stallone was about the collapse of the Holland Tunnel called Daylight. So it's very funny that you mentioned that. I hadn't thought about that in a while. I'm literally, I can look down at it right now. I can look down at the traffic because it's St. Patrick's Day and all the streets are closed. So you can imagine there's a big jam up with cars there. Anyway, okay, just threw that in, baby. Go ahead.
So I saw an interview with you. You were in a hotel with a wonderful piano. Are you back at the Mandarin Oriental? Is that your digs that you
stay
at? Oh, my
God, yes. Oh, yes, because, the reason is that I'm here is all the hotels were closed about, let's say, a year and a half ago. Not all of them, but that's why I came here. Only a few were open, and this is a great place. But I started coming here, and that time when I came here was that, if you saw that, whatever that thing was, it's too long. You'd need a whole hour just on what happened. And so now when I come here as to get me to stay here, they always say, hey, you can use the piano. And at 6 o'clock this morning, I was down in that place because it's got a great view of the city. And it's a real piano. Most hotels, I can't use the pianos that are, I have to bring something in my room. So anyway, yes, I'm back there.
Well, excellent. Not a bad place to hang out, though. I mean, if all the other hotels are closed and you have to stay at the Mandarin Oriental, not exactly roughing it, is it?
how about it's probably the best hotel in the city. So it's okay. I'm now this is where I stay. But they do give me, they do, it's a joke with that piano. We could do a screenplay based on me trying to get in to use that piano when they got like bar mitzvahs and weddings and, you know, like, who is this guy playing the piano? Get his ass out of there, you know. Anyway.
Well, Randy, what we like to do on the show is we like to go in the Wayback Machine, go back to where it all started. Can you give us a brief overview of what got you into music? I mean, I know it's a lot of history and BMI is involved, but can we go back in time?
Well, yeah, we can, but you don't have time. I mean, I started when I was very young. In New Jersey, another place which I could look to the right of where I am now, I can almost see Bergen County. That's the concrete jungle. I didn't come from the part of Jersey which they call the Garden State. So anyway, I started playing when I was very young, but you know, I wanted to be like, when I grew up, like there was only one thing. Music was not cool. What was cool was like, what do you think? Sports. So therefore, I tried to be very quiet. This is just a bit pre-Beatles even. So that's when, you know, music became more acceptable to the, you know, to the girls in high school. So anyway, I was playing very seriously piano, classical piano, since I was very young. But I did it very quietly. You know, it was kind of like my thing. And you know, too long a story. So I started way back then. And then I ended up when I went to college going to a place to study pre-med, but it was Cincinnati, Ohio. Too long a story to get into, but I started bringing kids from the school to a recording studio there to do some arrangements and things. I got into that, and it was King Records. If you know anything about the history of R&B, King Records was not only Bobby Blue Bland, but James Brown. And James Brown saw me one day in the studio, and he sees this 15, 16-year-old kid conducting a little orchestra and says, hey, you know, he can do my string charts. So we don't have to go to, at that time, Memphis or Chicago to do that stuff. So I got my feet wet doing that kind of stuff and getting into pop music. And by the time I got out of that school with a very serious music degree, I had my feet wet in other areas, shall we say. And I always loved pop music on the radio. So that's the start. And then from there, I went to New York and I played in the pit of many Broadway shows. And that was, you know, the time when really the whole singer-songwriter thing came in. And if you wrote songs, which I didn't, by the way, and wanted to get them recorded, 90% of the people that were selling records were no longer singers. It was, you know, people, it doesn't matter if it was the Beatles or Bob Dylan or James Taylor or Carole King or the Eagles, you know, they wrote their own stuff. So I started writing songs. There's another, a tale that goes along with that, a very sad tale about getting dumped by a girlfriend. And, you know, you always need something. You can look back and it sounds like a big joke, but it wasn't the time. But being kind of in this sad mood got me into writing these melodies and lyrics, and one thing led to another. And, you know, at that time, if you could carry a tune and write a decent melody, you could get a record deal. That may be putting it, you know, a bit too, that it may not really be the case. So I did that, and that's the start of my singer-songwriter thing. So that was all kind of a fluke. I never cared about making records or being a songwriter. I was a musician, like a serious musician, which I still am now. And so I got into that by chance and started from there, you know, doing albums and at the same time doing some music directing for lots of singers and stuff. So I had a lot of stuff going on when I was like 20 years old. This all happened very quickly. It didn't seem at the time to be quick, but it happened very quickly. And then, you know, I can't, there was no thought of being a film composer. I loved movies, but it wasn't like, oh, this is the ultimate thing. But while I was doing those albums, and fortunately for me, except for the UK, where something funny happened and I started having these hit singles. I mean, with me as an artist, my albums didn't happen, you know, like all over the place. And what that did is it left me time to do my other things. And so in the process of both writing songs and doing albums and my other things, which may have been scoring a little animated film or a TV movie or something like that, I had got a lot of stuff that I was doing, which eventually led many, many years later to me getting into, you know, the big time Hollywood film composing thing. But that was many years later. And luckily, when you always have to have you know, no matter how great you are, talented or well-schooled, or you have to have a break. So when the break happened to kind of let me in the door, in that I was ready because I had years of experience. But the people in Hollywood, I was the new guy in town. I was the new guy in town with this whole history already before I was the new guy in town doing, you know, Ghostbusters 2 and Ivan's films with, like you mentioned, Schwarzenegger, Twins and Kindergarten Cop and all that stuff. So that's, yeah, that's the long and short of it. So I'll stop there.
Well, no, that's all fascinating. I think one of the things that is so from 15 to 20, you're making your bones, you're learning how to put music together. I have to ask, where does If Love Is Real come into this? You talked about writing because of heartbreak and love.
If Love Is Real, well, as a matter of fact, I'll be doing that tonight. And I have to be careful because if I start telling the stories about these songs, it goes on too long. The story of If Love Is Real is there is there's no story. It's just a song. I'm not sure why you asked about it. Do you like that song?
I do. There's a line in the song where you go, if love is real, you've got to trust and let love go its way. And I just thought, like, the way it rolls off the tongue, the piano, just the, you know, your way with words and just composition. I loved it. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, it's not unlike other songs, but it has an interesting take on the lyric because it ends in obviously a very sad, you know, kind of sad way. It doesn't give you a lot of hope. You have to trust love. If love is real, trust and let love go its way. But I just writing lyrics for me was a very natural thing, but I never spent, it was mainly for me about the music. So only recently a lot of people have been looking at these lyrics that I wrote because not, you know, the albums weren't out there. The way a zillion people know the song. So I think my lyrics were more introspective in a way than I even knew I was doing. So I can't tell you, you know, get into some deep meaning of that, except what I just said. It's just pretty, it is exactly what it says. And it means that. But the story about that song, you know, that I'll just a little story. I opened for a lot of people. I opened for Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. And then the next night I'd go and open for like the Carpenters. I mean, you say, holy cow, how could you? You must have changed your show because the audiences were totally different. I couldn't change my show because I didn't have a show. I only had the song that I wrote. But the story about If Love Is Real is, which is, it's most known, even though people know it from me. I went and did a tour in Japan with Olivia Newton-John. She was like huge at the time. We played like the Budokan, these big, what they call their sumo gymnasiums. Basically, they were athletic field houses. They weren't concert halls. They were huge places. And I played her that song before I recorded it late one night, like in some place way outside Tokyo. And she recorded it. And so it was on, you know, big album. Her next album came out, and I always remember playing that for her because she had just like broken up with her boyfriend or something. So she really, it's like I was playing it for her in like a Holiday Inn in you know, Kyoto or someplace, and she was like crying. So like when I left there, I said, "Hey, I mean, I have a shot of her actually recording that song," which she did. So okay, that's that. What else? What else you got? Okay.
Well, I guess I'll ask you where you want to go from here, because I love the fact that every question I ask has like a story and you're trying to give me the condensed version.
You don't want it. Yeah. But you get into my last, you know, people think this is crazy. You know, a lot of people think I am the son of Randy Edelman, the songwriter. The guy doing all the films for the last 25 years is the son of the guy that wrote and did those albums. They just can't put it together that it's the same guy. Anyway, so there, I have stories, but no, you know what? I won't do that. You have to ask me, like, you have a film. I mean, songs, obviously, songs are in my past life. For years, I won't write a song for a film. It's not my job. There aren't any more film songs and films at all. There's none. That's over. There's records that people use after they shoot the film. They'll see a scene and then blah, blah, blah. But there's not, you know, the way it used to be a film had an orchestral theme. If it's Breakfast at Tiffany, the theme was Moon River. You know what I mean? Or a million other things. Those days are gone. So when I'm scoring a film, it's serious business. And have to support the director's vision and scenes, and I don't have time to worry about superfluous stuff like songs. So for years, they never even knew I wrote a song, all these directors. You know, I do like six films with the director. He never knew. But when I would go to England and I'd go to Abbey Road, which I do a lot, the orchestra players would get to the end. They go, okay, play Uptown Uptempo Woman or play Concrete and Clay. And so then the director would say, what's that? And those were huge, big hits there, you know, my own. So I don't like to really, we can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Like what you just asked me about, if love is real, but, mainly I've been doing films and loving it, you know, because the songwriting thing was sort of a fluke, you know, it was nothing planned. So, you know, that's, if you want to ask me about a film or a...
Oh, well, Mr. Edelman, I have so many films I want to ask you about. You know, as a film fan from probably, I was born in Edison, New Jersey. I'm not sure if that's Bergen County, but I'm also a New Jersey
yeah,
native.
Yeah, okay.
From way back in the day. And, but, you know, I grew up watching movies and I've always been more entranced and captivated by film music. And people say, well, this ex composer wrote my childhood. I cannot believe Mask, Beethoven, Angels in the Outfield, Ghostbusters 2, like all of these things, and 6 Days, Seven Nights. My favorite is probably Shanghai Noon. I don't geek out too much, but when I'm the idea of what you've done to my childhood and my emotions that you've pulled with your compositions, it's just there. I don't know where to start. So,
well, no, that's okay. I mean, you say something. I mean, a film like The Mask, I wish I could tell you the story that was a little film. They had no money. Now you might say, well, Jim Perry was hot. No, when they started shooting that film, Pet Detective thing just came out then. So by the time The Mask came out, it was a big deal. But when we started, and of course, it was a very interesting film. But that was an interesting story. Where did I record it? Ireland. Why the hell would I go to Ireland to record The Mask? Too long a story. I won't get into it. But that's where I did the orchestra. But an interesting film because it was very dark. What I wrote was very dark. All those films, Shanghai Noon, it was a takeoff, an orchestral takeoff on that whole Western Aaron Copland thing. I mean, I always got into those things. A lot of people, writing comedy music. I never wrote comedy music for one of those films. Only once in a while would I write something that if you heard it, you'd say, oh, that's funny. Because if the person in the leading role, whether it's Jim Carrey or Eddie Murphy or, you know, whoever it is, if they're good, you don't need music. I mainly am supporting the other parts of the movie, be it mystery, action, romance, you know. So I always had like a sort of a canvas. And when I look back now, it's easy to say, except when I was doing the films and you're under a lot of pressure, and these were, you know, big Hollywood studio films, the directors didn't understand it. So I had to be, you know, pretty tough, which got me into, you know, trouble a lot, trying to stick to my guns. And I'm so happy that I did, because now when I look back at those things, you play a film, I don't care if it's The Mask or something like My Cousin Vinny, you know what I mean? What the hell was My Cousin Vinny? A little film, no one cared. Well, it's the hottest movie there is, you know what I mean? And what did I do? I wrote a Southern rock and roll score. That's because what I did is, instead of writing about the two people who were two people from Brooklyn, obviously transplanted the down there, Pesci and Marissa Tomei, to get the kid out of jail. I wrote about the place. That's what that was about, where they were trying to get this kid out of this conviction, because all he did was steal a can of tuna fish and he was being convicted of murder. You know what I mean? But that I always had a puzzle. Beethoven, that was dead serious. What's the most obvious thing to write if that dog is called Beethoven? You'd say, oh, you'd write something like Beethoven. But nobody would do that because it's not only too obvious, it's too friggin' hard. That's what I did. So that theme, that great theme, is just like a takeoff on the third movement of every Beethoven. He wrote 5 piano concertos. That's what it is. And it is serious, and the playing serious. I do all this shit tonight in a medley called the Ha Ha Medley, which has all these films in it. Now, it's not all, each one obviously is pretty quick, a minute or two. But anyway, in 6 days and seven nights, that was a nightmare. Harrison Ford and
Hesh.
Yeah, but at the time, Anne Hesh was very hot because of what she revealed. So we had a screening like in Tucson or something like that. And the scene with, I kind of feel bad talking about this now because she's not here, but, you know, there was a scene on the beach with Harrison Ford getting on top of her. And the audience didn't seem to connect. Well, the reason they didn't connect is there was all this publicity that it happened. Like, come on. And what are they doing there? The music's not right there. No, there's something else going on here. And everybody is attuned to it. So, all kinds of funny stories. You know, those films are, yeah, you know, when you mention those films, they all have the Schwarzenegger pictures, which, by the way, they're just great. They're just really wonderful, intimate, good feeling films. Kindergarten Cop is very difficult because there's so many different aspects of it, and I had to play each one: the kids in school, the serious drug bust action stuff. So, you know, they're much harder to write than Last of the Mohegans or Gettysburg or Anaconda or The Mummy. You know what I mean? Because comedy is hard. The drama things pretty much dictate what you write for.
Well, that brings up a good point. Kindergarten Cop, it is so tender. It is so beautiful. But there is, you know, Richard Tyson's character, the father who's trying to get his son back.
That's
a dark undertone. Yeah.
Dead serious boy when he looks in the window and Schwarzenegger is reading those kids a story. And then I'm playing this little lullaby and the kids are being lulled to sleep. And then you see that guy's face. Well, I had to figure out now. I could have, you could have said, play the guy looking in the window or play the kid. No, I had to do both some way because that's a cop out. So things like that, you're asking me, things like that I remember because I had to figure it out. And there wasn't a lot of time. I could have spent a year on every one of those films. Sometimes I had 3 weeks, you know, whatever the situation was. So, but that one, and Ivan Reitman, who, Jesus, I mean, I can't believe all these people, Ivan passed away, I mean, unbelievably. These were tough guys, tough directors, you know, and you didn't just write something. And everyone has, you know, lots of things. I mean, and these guys, I was very fortunate to work with, you know, everybody from Alan, my favorite director in the world at the time, Alan Parker, when he was coming off Mississippi Burning. Jesus, he passed away. Ivan passed away, really. Michael Mann on Mohegans, he was a trip. Of course, that's a whole story, Last of Mohegans. But, and that was quick, by the way, you know. That was like, I came in to replace something, and my soundtrack is like, triple platinum. How is that possible? Nothing on it, no songs. What? It's just you can't predict these things, you know. So anyway, that's, you know, what can I tell you?
Well, it's nice that you have that ability and that option. I mean, I think a lot of people, you were saying before, maybe in an interview I listened to you where you got typecast doing comedies, but then you started to branch out to dramas. But then you did something like MacGyver.
MacGyver. You know, you just don't do MacGyver. There's got to be a story, and there is. But MacGyver, by the way, MacGyver I did before big film stuff happened. You know what I mean? And you know what? Oh, my God. MacGyver done for, I met Ivan, Ghostbusters 2 and Twins. And, you know, so that was the start of my big time scoring thing. I had done television before. But I never did a show that was wall-to-wall music. You do a show, and maybe there's, 5 minutes, 10 minutes in an hour show of music. An hour show has, let's say, 47 minutes of film, 13 minutes of commercials, let's say. So if you do a show like, I'll just pick, Hill Street Blues or something, a quote dramatic show with music, you have a few minutes of, But MacGyver was different. MacGyver was wall-to-wall music. They wanted, Indiana Jones. Why? Because it stunk, and it needed music. It was the first time I kind of got into that stuff, and I did it all with one instrument, but I just tracked it and made it sound big. And then when the show was picked up, everybody hated it, by the way. There was no way the show was going to ever be picked up. So I did it, forgot about it. But then they liked the guy who played MacGyver, Richard Dean Anderson. And they picked up the show. And suddenly, I had to write 47 minutes of music overnight. I couldn't do anything musically, but I couldn't do that. And I didn't know what you had to have. What do you have to have? You have to have 15 guys in the back room. Now, that you know what I mean? That's over-exaggerating it. But you have to have help. That's the way all these guys did it. It's not taking anything away from anybody. But you have to have people copying. You have to have people orchestrating. So I went nuts. I literally had a nervous breakdown. I wrote the theme. So, and the show, it just kept getting picked up. It ran forever. It's still, last year they did a new version of it. But the theme became a big theme, that kind of peppy thing. And when they first did the show, they said, okay, you gotta write the theme. I said, I already wrote the theme. What do you mean you wrote the theme? You did the pilot. The pilot episode is like a TV movie. It doesn't have a placeholder thing with the titles and the. I said, oh, when he jumps off the cliff, that's gonna be the theme. And they said, no, we can't do that. Anyway, I held out. That became the theme and became a very famous, television. Greatest theme of all time, or whatever it was. And, but I ended up, went to France. They gave me an award. That show was on in France, every night for years. I ended up leaving the show, but it was on, so I still had the theme. But then I came back to it, and then I left, and then I came back, and then finally I just dumped it, and the show continued to go on. But the reason I'm telling you this story is it was a great experience for me to have because I had to write so much music that when I got into feature films, and let's say you had a short time, 3 weeks, well, that's a lot more than 3 days. So it turned out to be a real good kind of thing to know whether the music that I wrote for MacGyver was good or bad in those 3 days. And it was 47 minutes, and all I had to write for whatever film it was in 3 weeks, which was considered a very short amount of time, was 30 minutes. So it's all that stuff works, good experience. Who's that guy I see in the window? That's a new guy, and I don't like the way he looks either.
Hey.
Okay.
Randy, I'd like to introduce you to Steve. He's an acquaintance I've made over the years, but Steve, introduce yourself. He's a big fan as well.
Yes. Hi, Randy. Very, very privileged to meet you. I'm Steve. I'm in the UK.
Hi, Steve.
And I'm a musician. Mark and I talked a while back about some stuff, and we got to talking about Ghostbusters. And turns out we were both huge fans. And then he contacted me to let me know that he was interviewing you and asked if I'd like to come and be a co-host for the show. And so I thought, how can I say no?
UK. So I've had a whole different experience in the UK way before the films, with Uptown, Uptempo Woman, and all that stuff. But also a lot of the films, Mark mentioned, all the Jackie Chan Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights, and The Mummy, and I've scored those over. I go over all the time to score them. But the record thing when I was, that was kind of interesting because that was just completely off the wall, those things coming over and doing, what was it, Top of the Pops and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, and I know it's, your career is a very fascinating one because you sort of lived sort of multiple lives in some ways, sort of with your own personal music and then all the soundtrack work alongside. So yeah, I mean, it's all just it's really fascinating.
Songwriting thing never ran alongside of the films. They were completely separate.
Okay.
Now I'm kind of doing stuff a little more, but those things have to be treated. There is no equivalent. Songwriting is that's one thing. Film scoring is a whole other thing, and that's why, well, there's nobody really who's doing that. And there is another guy named Randy, coincidentally enough, and he's terrific and he's done a lot of stuff, but he does it very infrequently, not like my 25-year 100 film run. But I really musically it was very challenging to me, so it worked out well, because I was just totally focused, which you have to be when you do that kind of work. But it was interesting, and I was talking about my favorite director, Alan Parker, who passed away last year. I mean, just the best. I mean, his film's great, and I did the internment film called Come See the Paradise with him. But he was just a terrific guy, really interesting guy.
So you say it's very challenging in different ways doing the film versus sort of writing songs, as it were. Do you find one harder than the other, or is it just a very different discipline?
No, writing song is not hard. Writing song is like a, falling off a chair. That doesn't mean that they're any good, but writing songs is you can write a great song in 5 minutes. No, film scoring is backbreaking. It's backbreaking and it's time consuming and it's 24/7 and nothing. If songwriting's a different, I'm not putting down the art of songwriting, but it's not, no, it's a whole different discipline and you have to have the chops to do it. Nowadays, of course, with the technology, you can, I won't get to trouble when I talk about people, but obviously, I come from a very traditional conservatory classical background, but obviously technology has happened, and so people that score films, they don't even know how to necessarily read music. That's okay. That doesn't mean they're not brilliant, but they don't. They are coming at it a different way through the technology. So we all know who those people are, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's a different the way they go about it is differently. I still basically go about it in the kind of the old-fashioned way, except that of course I'm using my electronic equipment as also part of the orchestra. I just finished a horror film, which I did basically myself. But so that it's and that doesn't really change the quality of the music. The music's the same as if I had a 100-piece orchestra, just a different way of going about it.
Yeah, that's actually one thing. I mean, and again, if you've touched on this, feel free to just skim over it. But thinking about some of the work you've done, I big fan of certainly that sort of late 80s into early 90s, a lot of the Ivan Reitman stuff. One of the things that I feel really nostalgic and really fond about those records is I feel like I'm hearing a lot of Yamaha DX7 and things like that lovely glossy electric piano and things at times. Did you often bring that sort of contemporary technology in? So, did you feel compelled to do it, or were you
Oh,
sort of asked to do it?
no, that was happening at no, that was happening at the time. That was no, Ivan. No, by the time I met Ivan, I mean I wasn't a big. I came into the electronic thing late, but I was into it by then. And well, yeah, you have a DX7, you have a Jupiter 8, and yet. So if you hear that, yeah, absolutely. A lot of that stuff. But no, I did it because I'm a keyboard player and I love doing it. What's it like? I did it because I want this sound. I just wrote what I wrote, and as part of the orchestration, I would always use that stuff. And it's still the same. It's a great puzzle and like a game. It's still great. It adds to the way you build a scene and a cue and the music in a film. For me, it's just part. It's not. It's the same as the orchestration, whatever I'm using. And I still use. Of course, now everything's in a box. But in my place, in the back of my house where I do writing, I still have I still have those things because I didn't know where to put them. So they're still out, and people think, are you using that? No, but it's still sitting there, you know.
Great,
I was
great.
looking for my Jupiter 8, and I couldn't find it the other day. Now these things are a premium, you know, they're selling for a fortune.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. That's great. I'm glad to hear you still have like a DX7 kicking around at home and stuff.
Oh,
That's
yeah, I
great.
think that thing. I don't know about that one, but that,
Oh.
yeah. And there's certain sounds. I had something called a mudhorn. They didn't call it a mudhorn, but it was an early, like, believe me, probably a factory sound. It's kind of
Oh.
a muffled French horn. And I used to, a mudhorn, boom. You can't, and mudhorns, boy, no matter. I was in, last time I was in London, I forgot what I was doing. And it's just like, I mean, I had like the best, I had an eight. You know, eight piece French horn section, you know, couldn't get the mud horn. I ended up putting the mud horn in, you know.
Great.
So, so that's, and you're always beefing up a string section with like a Jupiter 8 pad, you know, I mean, that great old just back there. And a lot of people I get put down all the time, you know, they'll be reviewing a soundtrack, and but you know, I don't care, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff like, I
Great.
mean, period stuff like the Scordue historical Gettysburg, which is, you know, again, I was talking to Mark, you know, the all these things have huge stories, but I used a lot of that, even though it's very legit, very American, and it just the flavor, and I think it has a certain brightness to it because of that stuff that's sitting back there, you know. And a lot of times, if I go around, I don't do that much, but we're all going to Boston Pops or somebody, and they'll do Gettysburg. And there's a guitar solo, you know, they never get it, you know. Remember an instrument called a Proteus? Proteus One had this guitar on it, and this is very well known. Piece from Gettysburg, and it is a Proteus One. And when I did Last of the Mohicans with Daniel Day-Lewis and Michael Manny, he wanted that sound, and he thought it was, you know. So we got to get the who. I said who. It's right over there. And a matter of fact, I threw it away. It's on a shelf because it's like it's an old thing. He said, no, I want that sound. That's what it was.
Wow.
So these things have. Now you have to use them correctly in the right registers. It has to be the music, whatever it was, has to hopefully have a certain quality to it. So, but if you do the right thing and it's the right sound and the right register, it has its own personality, you know. So
Yeah,
there you go.
that's very cool.
There you go.
Steve's a big fan of Dragonheart, and I like what you've done in things like I said before, Shanghai Noon. Are there certain instruments that were like experimental or things that you weren't sure were going to work? And Steve, chime in if you want any questions about Dragonheart. But what was kind of
Well,
uncertainty at the time?
no, never, no uncertainty at all. No, Dragonheart, my God, that was really interesting experience. I was doing Dragonheart, shooting Daylight, that's before the Stallone picture, and I'm looking at the window I told you, right? And I'm looking at the Holland Tunnel. Do you know where the Holland Tunnel was? They built it in Rome. You ask me why? I can't tell you. Now, did they build a tunnel? Of course not. They built an interior thing on that famous Chenecittà, whatever it's called, lot, Fellini's lot. It's a very famous lot. And they were shooting that interior in the tunnel. And I flew over there. But I was doing Dragonheart is because Dragonheart was the first time ILM did the talking dragon. Now, you know, everybody has dragons now and they talk, but they were waiting for the special effects. So I went over there and was writing Daylight, seeing at night, because the same director, Rob Cohen, on both those films, seeing at night the talking dragon coming in from ILM in near San Francisco, wherever it is. And that was, That was another one that, yeah, that really resonated, the Dragonheart score. That was terrific for me. That music was just used just all over the place for a lot of stuff. That was an example of film music kind of having its own life. I don't think that film really got the any recognition that it should have. I mean, Sean Connery was the voice of Draco the Dragon, but yeah, that was just pretty straight ahead, except that I had a look at a lot of it when I was in Rome in the Holland Tunnel, which I'm looking at now in my window. However, it was in Rome. Now, you know, I could have these stories go as your pickup all day, but I unfortunately I gotta go.
Well, Randy, thank you immensely for your time. The touching the tip of the iceberg on your career has just been a big blessing to
Well, thank you. And
myself.
listen, you can, you know, I tell, I mean, especially to Eileen, who you may have talked to, when people are interested in stuff, man, I'll talk all day, and I can tell from you guys, like I said, these film scores have stories, both about the personnel, the director, you know, all that surrounding it, and also about musically. So I'm always more than happy to talk about it. I wish I had, you know, a little more time. It's just we, you know, I just can't right now. And I'm telling you, are you still in New Jersey?
No, I'm in Texas. I left New Jersey a number of years ago.
Left because you'd be driving in tonight. You'd be driving
It's
in
one of the great
now.
regrets I have is not coming to your concert. So I will
Well,
cry
this is
crocodile
this
tears.
it, now, and what it's called is it's called the St. Patrick's Day Massacre. That's tonight, the St. Patrick's Day. But I don't do that. I don't do it that often. However, where's our English friend?
I'm here.
I'm coming over there, man.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I gotta find some play. Yeah, so I'll be. Where are you? You're not in London, are you?
No, I'm about 50 miles south of London, just outside Brighton.
Brighton. Yes, I took concerts in Brighton some yeah long time ago. But anyway,
Great.
okay, guys, I really appreciate your interest and like I said, I have no problem talking about the stuff when somebody is as kind of involved and into the music the way both of you seem. So we'll do it
Well,
again.
wonderful.
All right?
I can't wait. All the
Okay.
best.
Yep.
All
Brilliant.
right,
Thank you,
you
Andy.
too.                                                                                                                └².└================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================````================================================================================================================================================�².================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================